Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
So, Paul, you wrote this weekend, and I thought it was a great point because it's hard not to read into it this way, that John Robinson's third draft tells us he did not think that the players were responsible for the offensive problems last year. And you're reading into that based on what they've done in the draft. They had six picks. They leave with four, and they helped their defense out tremendously.
Yeah, not even just that. I mean, let's take it another direction. This is a three wide receiver offense base, we're presuming. I think reasonably so. Not only is he happy with the wide receiver, Matt LaFleur is happy with the wide receiver. We said, and Chad, you said this on Friday, I think. What they do in the draft is going to tell us what they think of Taywan Taylor. Yeah. It's going to tell us what they think about a lot of players. Well, guess what? Everybody on offense got a vote of confidence. Everybody.
It's a good point. I mean, it may also tell us what they think about those spots on defense being so much more of a pressing need, and not necessarily it's the verdict on Taywan Taylor, but it certainly shows that they're at least comfortable with him, that they didn't have a pressing need there to trade up and draft a wide receiver.
And with Sharp, I think, you know, I got a lot as soon as the draft is over, people saying, bring back Decker, bring back Decker, bring back Decker. Oh, I don't understand why you're feeling like that's what they'd want. Tajay Sharp is getting.
He's the forgotten man in the rotation.
Yeah. And, no, look, I mean, Decker got a lot of snaps last year, but part of it, too, was that Corey Davis was out a bunch, that Taylor hadn't graduated to a degree of dependability, and that Tajay Sharp missed the season. You put all that back in, it's not going to be hard to fill up the snaps. I'm still concerned about receiver when somebody twists an ankle or pulls a hamstring, because in a three-wide receiver offense, you need some depth. You know, and Robinson said that they'll keep their eye open on everything, but he said he likes the wide receiver group. In answer to a question, and more broadly, you know, he said, you know, I got a walkaway question with him about the staff, and he said, yeah, you know, I'd see what these guys are installing and running, and it's going to be good. Basically, it's going to be good. So, again, I wouldn't do this very often in a draft, because I think you need to replenish the back end competition and depth and all of that. But I do think, in general, we as a football society overvalue a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick. And so to do this one time where you, I mean, he's passed on the fourth round his whole career so far, but to do this one time where you take a long pause between picks in order to get two guys, I mean, this is 2 years in a row that they've, I know it's not technically so, 2 years in a row they got two first-round picks, you could say, the way they scored Landry, the way they graded Landry. So you now got Corey Davis, Adoree Jackson, Rashawn Evans, and Harold Landry at the top of your last two drafts. I mean, that sounds like a group of guys you build a team around.
You should be able to build a team around. Now, Corey Davis is the big player out there that they have to hit on, to me.
And I think another thing to point out,
number
is,
five overall, you have to have production. The guy's got to be healthy.
I'd say the pressure on Vrabel is pretty good. I mean, expectations, he said he knew coming in the door. But obviously, Robinson feels like Vrabel's inheriting a pretty good roster. And I think one thing we don't do and go back enough, because Robinson did not inherit a very good roster. But you know what Robinson did inherit? A quarterback and a left tackle. And so those were scratched off his list immediately. You know what most GMs are doing as soon as they're hired? Trying like hell to secure a quarterback and a left tackle.
That's a good
point. For all the bad stuff that Rustin Webster did and Ken Wisenhunt did, Robinson didn't inherit a terrible situation in that probably the top two things you need to check off your list, he inherited. And he could get to work with piece three instead of piece one. And that's a huge advantage. That's what made the job attractive to a lot of people. And that's what made the job the coaching job attractive to a lot of people. Not that they're not all attractive, but especially attractive.
615-737-1045, our number, specifically with Harold Landry. Paul, you wrote that the Titans feel like he still has his fastball, I think is how you worded that. There were questions about that because he's been hurt. It was an ankle injury that kept him on the shelf a bit his senior year.
I think he missed 5 games, and his production was way down. The year before, he had 16.5 sacks, which is
led the nation.
A ridiculously productive
and here's the other thing that
junior year
that has been a bit overlooked about Harold Landry, and I raised my hand and say it. I didn't look it up until after he was picked. The guy has 10 forced fumbles. He had 7 forced fumbles the year that he led the nation in sacks. So not only is he getting the quarterback to the ground, he is creating game-changing plays while doing that. There is an art to getting the football loose while you're rushing the passer, and he's been able to do that.
He also gives you a dynamic, right? Listen, we know ultimately he's going to get plenty of chances this year if everything goes well, but ultimately next year you imagine he's starting, unquestionably starting, and he's one of the top 2, whereas this year he's one of the top 3. I haven't thought about this enough, but, I mean, Arakpo is a power rusher, right? He's a speed to power.
Yes.
He's generally going to bull rush, right?
Yeah, that's what he does, yes.
And Morgan is not, he's more finesse, certainly, but he's also not a dynamic burn the edge. I've been using the term burn the edge. So Landry is different from them in that I think he's more of a bender and more of a guy that can really beat you outside with speed as opposed to needing the handwork or the move. You know what I mean?
Great lateral quickness as well as the front line quickness.
So I think he gives them kind of a outside of rounding out their pass rush group in terms of numbers, he rounds out their pass rush group in terms of the skill set.
And if you watch him with the loop moves that he would use at Boston College, it's not always to the outside. He could bend back inside on some of these rushes. You know, that I think when you visualize an edge rush, you're thinking if he's lined up on the left, for instance, he's rushing to the left outside edge. This guy was able to loop back in with his flexibility and get to the quarterback quickly.
He wore 7, right?
Yes.
That's another thing. I know some people might think I'm crazy. Sweat also wore single digit. I have trouble sometimes seeing guys at thick positions, so to speak, in a single digit. It plays it's an illusion on me, an optical illusion. It makes them look smaller than they are as compared to the like giant 98 and the new huge numbers on Arakpo. And a single 7 on a Boston College Eagles uniform.
See, I think it makes them look more badass. Like Jadeveon Clowney wearing number 1, I think it was, at South Carolina. Derek Barnett in number 9 at defensive end at Tennessee. A lot of those Florida defensive tackles started this with, you know, wearing number 2, 3, whatever it may be. I understand where you're going. It almost makes you look smaller, but it also makes you look more athletic. For those huge guys to wear that single digit.
But it makes you look smaller and more athletic, like you look like a big tight end. Yeah.
He may be listed a little bit shorter than Derek Morgan. 6'2.5", something like that. What's
he's not
Morgan?
The tallest guy, but he's long.
What's Morgan? 6'3"?
Probably.
Yeah, so I think they're very similar in size.
Derek Morgan?
And Landry.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter says NFL Network said back and knee issues for Landry. I thought it was an ankle issue.
Well, the ankle issue is his senior year. Then what was driving him down the board, or as he was going down the board, this was the rumor that there were some lingering things. But here's the thing. I mean, the Titans said they don't put any stock into it. Their doctors were complete green light. Landry said he didn't know where it was coming from. And here, I'm not a conspiracy guy at all. But could it have been coming from the Titans?
Maybe.
Played to their advantage, certainly. Morgan 6'3".
Yeah, I think they're very comparable in size. Now, they also trade up to get Landry. They jump ahead of the Patriots. Can we assume that Evans and Landry would have been fits for New England?
I think fits for New England, and I think fits for Pittsburgh. And who are New England and Pittsburgh? The two consistently the two best teams in the AFC, at least in the regular season, as of late. I mean, I was going to say this, spinning off of that, like, the Patriots are the Patriots. You know, I expect the Patriots to win that division. There's not a lot of competition there, but I don't think they're as good as they've been. Who in the AFC do you like? Like, I look at the NFC and I'm like, I could really see the Rams or the 49ers breaking through to the next level. They'll be there with the Eagles, provided the Eagles don't have any big injury loss. And those three could really scramble it out. In the AFC, if you're looking for who's challenging the Patriots and the Steelers, who get into the playoffs and don't do anything, probably the reason I'm not seeing that team is because it's probably in the AFC South. And it's probably Jags, Texans, or Titans.
There's multiple options in the AFC South. By the way, Morgan 6'3", Landry 6'2". So very close. Here's what I thought with the Patriots, them jumping ahead of the Patriots. Not necessarily that would have been the pick, or that John Robinson was thinking, oh, they need this, they're going to go get this guy. I think it's him saying, I know they think just like me on guys. I think it's John Robinson reading into it saying, I bet that Bill Belichick likes Harold Landry too.
Well, Pittsburgh,
I bet
absolutely.
That he loves Rashawn Evans.
Pittsburgh absolutely was coming up for Rashawn Evans. Jerry Dulac, a guy who we see at all the big events, he's a radio a guy in addition to being a columnist in Pittsburgh, said that was their target. And he does strike me as a very Pittsburgh Steeler type player.
And if you have ties to New England, Boston College, I mean, it's right there. I mean, you know, you have the contacts. Plus, Vrabel has a son that's committed to Boston College.
And look, you know who probably likes Pittsburgh Steelers style linebackers? Mike Vrabel played in Pittsburgh for 4 years. His better work was in New England, and he's known as a Patriot. But he's got a sense of what a Steelers linebacker is. He was one. And, you know, if you're going to be somebody's linebackers, what team in football
would
you pick?
Want
Chicago Bears or Steelers, right?
I mean, yeah, I think everyone would love that.
Going into this draft, we've said it for the last couple of drafts, but specifically last year and this year, with the two first-round picks and then the pieces that we felt they needed defensively this year, we were always, the go-to was the Javon Kearse line. They need a Javon Kearse-type impact player on defense that can rush the passer and be disruptive. Did they find that guy in Harold Landry? That's
as
ultimately what it
get.
Comes down
as
to.
As close as you could get.
But see,
I don't think it's Javon Kearse. But in this draft, he's as close as you can get.
But everyone in the mock drafts felt that way about Landry.
I thought Landry was going to Green Bay. Then Green Bay traded down, and I thought, well, he's going to. Then when Green Bay traded back up, I was like, oh, that's going to be Landry for sure. And Green Bay went crazy with corners.
They went crazy with their secondary. They have spent a ton of draft capital, on secondary.
Yeah.
You over the last several done? Years, not just this year.
You know what they should have done? Re-signed Casey Hayward.
Well, and they've tried to reshape their secondary multiple times through the draft in the last 3 years.
Well, and how much do they need a wide receiver, too?
Josh Reynolds.
Jordy Nelson's gone.
Josh Reynolds on Twitter points out that in addition to Marcus Mariota and Taylor Lewan, John Robinson inherited the number one pick in the draft, mm-hmm. which he turned into a great deal of capital. So he had three big chips coming in.
615-737-1045, our number. Crookshank, to me, is a safety. Athletic safety that you can place around the defense.
Now, need him to be a safety.
Here's something that I feel like needs to be discussed, because we crushed Rustin Webster and Ken Wisenhunt for using the word versatility so much. We're hearing that a lot now with this staff.
Well, here's the difference.
Fair. I mean,
no, they're using that a lot. You're raising, but here's the difference. I would say to Wisenhunt, what's the identity of this team? Who are you? And he'd say, we're versatile.
Right.
Rustin Webster would say, we're versatile. If you say, what's the identity to Mike Vrabel and John Robinson, they say, team first, unselfish, discipline, do your job, all of that. They don't identify versatility as their identity. It's a quality that they like to have. That was my argument against Wisenhunt and Webster using versatility isn't an identity. It's a quality. So it's perfectly fine that you want the quality, but don't sell it to me as what you would paint on the wall. We are versatile? That's what you're going to put on the blank? No. We're tough, disciplined, physical. Every team in the league's using those terms. And yeah, Webster,
Mike
and
Malarkey
Webster,
used those terms. Yeah,
and Webster and Wisenhunt couldn't figure out, you know, the thematic identity of the team. To me, versatility isn't a thematic identity of a team. It's a quality you want. And they certainly have found some guys that are giving them that.
Well, let's look at the Cruikshank pick. It's one thing to have versatility fourth, fifth, sixth round with a pick. I don't want versatility to be the first thing that rolls off your tongue in the first and second round with a guy.
Yeah,
I want it to
it's
be,
a bonus. It's a bonus.
He's this.
Yeah.
That's the other thing you hear all
Rashawn
the time.
Rashawn Evans is versatile, but I'm not – the first thing that comes to mind is not he's versatile. Yeah. It's he's a good inside linebacker. Yeah. Harold Landry, it's this guy can affect the game.
Yeah, excellent speed.
Yeah.
This is another thing. We'll stick with the versatility thing for a minute. A lot of interior offensive linemen, you know, went in this draft, a good share of them, you know, in the 20s. This thing where, you know, it's a center, but he can play guard. For the love of man, I mean, to me, we're getting to the point where it's newsflash if he's a center who can't play guard. If you're really touting for me, this center is great because he can also play guard. Well, here's a newsflash. In the NFL today, if you're a center, you're probably going to have to be able to play guard. If you're a tackle, you're probably going to have to be able to play left and right. If you're a depth guy, you're probably going to have to be able to play guard and tackle. Show me the offensive lineman who can only play one position. That's the news flash now.
Or show me a center who can play left tackle.
Yeah.
That's a news flash. Show me a guard who can also play tight end. There's a news flash. I'm with you. When it's sliding over one spot, it's not as
to be expected. Everybody should be able to do it. Unless you're so busy being great at left tackle that it's not a, you know, we don't need to know if Taylor Lewan can play guard because there's no circumstance under which he'd be asked to play guard.
And look, the trades up we've discussed. Cruikshank, they're listing him as a defensive back. They won't say safety, right? He's played corner at Arizona, but
they're calling him DB.
Again, I think he was better inside and better when he lined up at that hybrid safety role that they use there. And watching him play, he's also going to be a very good special teams player with his athleticism. It's hard not to see him playing a big role there.
Could take over the Eric Weems role.
Speaking of taking over, how quickly, if you draft Luke Falk, how quickly should he take over for Blaine Gabbert?
Next year.
You think it's a one-year deal?
Well, Gabbert had a two-year deal, I'm pretty sure. I could see it being, you know, depending on his progress. And then what you want is for him, whether it's year two or year three, you want him at least to be your backup.
What's the best case scenario?
But the end game,
Titans draft him. Best case scenario.
Well, best case scenario is you trade him for a second round pick in a couple years after he somehow plays in a couple games.
Our best case scenario with him staying on this roster.
Yeah, he's your backup.
He takes over next year.
Yeah, I think so.
2019.
Yeah. But you got to see how healthy Mariota stays this year. You got to see what Gabbert does when he's called on. You got to see what Falk's growth curve is and the pace of it.
And LaFleur went to Utah to work him out.
Yeah,
is that right?
He's from Utah, so I think he went to his hometown.
Well, it's tough to find quarterback fits in the league, but for a draft where I thought, okay, they get the extra sixth round pick at the time during the trade when they swap with Baltimore, they gave up their fourth, gained a sixth, and then moved up in the first round. I'm thinking, okay, maybe quarterback is in play. I wasn't expecting quarterback in the sixth.
No, once it was four picks, I almost tweeted, yeah, well, quarterback's out of play.
Yeah, I'm glad. I felt the same way. Is it the right pick there if the quarterback is at a certain level on your board?
Yeah, I mean, I think a quarterback's the right pick. Once you've addressed your predominant stuff,
yeah,
and you see a guy that to
but
you
have they addressed,
scored high?
I guess my question is, were there other positions that needed to be addressed with that selection?
Wide receiver.
That would have been the next one for me. I mean, they addressed the three biggest with the first three picks and then thought Falk was too good to pass up. So we talked about Falk and Ferguson from the very beginning. I think we had, was it Dane Brugler or Matt Miller on, like during the Titans bye week last year where we had a super early draft conversation.
Yeah.
I think it was Matt Miller. And said, all right, you know, mid-round guy who could be backup caliber quarterback, and he said Falk and Ferguson right off the bat. Where did Ferguson get drafted or not? I'm not remembering.
I have to look that up. He did.
Riley Ferguson was not drafted.
Oh, he's undrafted?
No, undrafted.
We know where he signed?
Hold on one second. I'll tell you. I know that
that's interesting.
He was an undrafted free agent.